Had it at the first.
Yeah, he had it
first. So
first.
was the store built by the Riviera?
The store was built by Riviera, and then they tried to find somebody to operate it. So they hired.
So they'd already built it and everything.
Yeah, it was built in there. And they hired Kolachek to operate it for a while. Or I think it was a franchise. You know, you rented it or something, and he did it
kind of have like the restaurant is run now.
Yeah, but it didn't work out for him. And then there was a guy, Thompson, I don't remember his name either. He ran it for a while. He did pretty good on it, I think.
Yeah.
And he did pretty good. And then he left, and then Jeff started running it. And then they wanted to sell it.
Jeff did?
No, the Riviera.
The Riviera.
They wanted to sell the whole thing, get out of it. And so Jeff and myself and Alan Billet then bought the thing from Riviera. And then,
he's been there ever since.
Been there ever since.
Yep. So what kind of changes have you seen since it was first built?
The store?
Inside the store and what goes on there.
Well, at first it just had just a few items in it, you know. And, of course, it was in competition with the other store. And
what did people do when they were given the choice between the Riviera store and the Lyle store?
The old timers were
strictly Lyle store.
Pretty much, yeah, loyal to Lyle. You know, and then some people tried to do a little bit of both, you know. And then of course some people were Lyle store wasn't that clean, and so some of the people, new people, were appalled by how nasty it was down there, so they wouldn't go down. They'd go to the new store. And they both ran together for what, 5-6 years? I don't remember before Lyle closed. But, you know, yeah, I think it took a lot of his business away by the end. But he was ready to retire anyway, so I don't think he cared. But, you know, it's increased in variety of stuff tremendously, you know.
There's very few things you can
use. Everything in there now. And most of the covered porches now are closed in for the store. It used to be surrounded, just the main part of the store. Everything around the outside was empty. Covered porches that are all closed in now. So it's probably doubled in size.
No, there was a real estate office.
The real estate office was where the, on the deli end of it, you know? And then that moved over into the, did it move into that, where the restaurant was first? I don't remember. It was over there for a while, yeah.
I think Morris said that it was when they built, like, where Jeff's house is now.
Yeah.
It was there.
The house where the restaurant is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was there for a while. That house was built by, I think, Lumberman Company. Some company came out and was going to build it for a demonstration home. Was going to sell a whole bunch of them, but I guess they picked a bad design because nobody ever bought any of them. They were going to actually, we were going to move it on somebody's lot.
Oh, really?
Set it up for people to see how nice their houses were, and then after they sold some, then they were going to sell that. But they never sold any houses, nor that one, so it ended up just being
just
there.
Sitting there.
Yeah, so it was just set up there temporarily.
Uh-huh.
As a demonstration home to
and
be moved
it
later.
Still sits there. So, when did the Gillettes move in there?
See, they rented a house up in that Paddleboat house that Smith lives in, Martha Smith. I think they lived there first. They rented a house and then they moved into there.
Moved into there afterwards. Didn't know how I could deal with. I don't know how you deal with living so close to your own business. You know?
It's not a good deal.
No. I don't know. I don't think I would like that very much. Having people knock on your door at all hours of the night. How about some of the community events, like the Apple Squeeze or the fairs, or what can you remember or tell me about those?
Well, when I first came down, the Salmon Bake was down at Lorraine Christensen's on the beach. And it was really nice. I mean, it just, you know, kids swim in the water, and it was on that big lawn, and it was very, very comfortable, very nice. And then when they moved it to the historical society, well, it got too hot up there, nothing to do, you're out in the middle of it, you know, it kind of...
People just kind of get their food and don't stick around much longer after
but,
that.
But, you know, it sells lots of salmon, but it's a whole different kind of thing than what it was like a big family picnic down there at Christmas.
An excuse to get together and hang out.
And the fair was, you know, a lot more vegetables and stuff in it when I first came here. Everybody, a lot of very competitive gardeners out here, and they'd all bring their stuff down. You know, so you had a lot of displays of stuff, and then a lot of handcrafts for sale, and I think they used to sell. You know, I think they had used things for sale too, but you know, it was just on a smaller scale. But you know, those things were a lot more fun when they were smaller.
Right.
They weren't as crowded, and they were much more personal. You know, and of course, at that point, everybody knew everybody, so everything was.
So you sit there and talk about the squash that was 5 pounds and.
Yeah, it was. It's changed. Those kind of things have changed a lot with with increased population and having, you know, not knowing everybody when you go there.
Yeah, I know. My heart always kind of sinks when they go to do the raffle and it's not an Islander that wins.
Yeah,
the
boat, they take those quotes and they go off somewhere, you know.
I know, it's just kind of like, oh. That's just not. I don't know. So what kind of fun stuff have you seen at the fair, done at the fair that you can remember?
Oh, the programs have always been fun, the little kids. You know. That one where we had that what do you call those groups that come out?
The medieval.
Medieval thing. That was a pretty fun one. I can't think much. No, off the fair offhand.
Let's see. How about your kids' lives out here? How did they do growing up out here and?
Well, I think for little kids, it's great, you know. Little kids like, and for Amy, you know, Amy liked horses, and so she was just,
I mean, would have, think that she could
have her own paddock, her own horses, and her goats, and animals and stuff, and chickens. She had lots of animals. And Kirsten really liked the beach, and she spent a lot of time on the beach, and she liked the woods. But Kirsten was also very attached to the older people, so she spent a lot of time at Mabel's and a lot of time at Hazel and Earl's house. You know, she liked older people as a kid. She was more social, where Amy liked them. So it was, you know, and the boys, you know, they just loved it when they were little. It gets a little harder when they get junior and high school, but all of them seemed able to find a friend on the other side that gave a place to stay, and so
they can go and do those extra things.
So I think it worked out fine for them. You know, there was a. When Ginger was in high school, there was a lot of drugs now at that time. So it was, we had some very difficult times, and she'd snuck out several times, you know, and got caught, was grounded for a long time. So yeah, the drugs were, during that time was probably the worst out of the head of just a lot, and some older guys that were having parties for and trying to attract, you know, teenage, junior high kids to these drug parties. But most overall, I think it's been a really good place for kids.
How about, remember you told me a story about Amy, and someone with a horse that wasn't behaving at all, or something
well, that
like
was,
that?
No, she was... Well, it was the second horse we'd gotten her, and it was an older horse. It was probably, and it might have been 20 years old when we got it for her. Maybe not that old, but it was an older horse. And it didn't like men. You know, you couldn't, so, you know, any time a man come here, it'd start jumping and shying away, you know. So apparently some man had beaten it or something one time. But so it took a long time for it would allow me to get near it. And then if I allowed me, then I was the only man. No other men could come around. So we were having shoes put on it, and these guys came out, two men came out, and they had a cattle truck kind of with a rack on the back. And Amy was at school, you know, and so I got the horse for him, and I went off doing something, and I came back, you know, and they had this horse all tied up to the side of this car, ropes all over, you know, and the horses and all frothed up in the sweat, you know, and wild-eyed looking and
scared and just,
you know, because they hadn't even got one shoe off, you know, and everything's been kicked and thrashed around, you know. Well, in the meantime, Amy had come home from school, and I saw Ken. I said, God, what the hell is going on? I was, won't let us pick her feet up. We can't get, you know, get shoes off. And I said, well, get all the ropes off her, you know. So I got it all untied and got it all loose, you know, and Amy pet her and calmed her down. I said, well, have Amy hold his foot for you. And then you take shoes off. So Amy would pick the foot up, and the guy took the shoe off. She stood there fine, you know, as long as Amy was holding her. But the shoe would take the shoe off and put a shoe on as long as Amy would hold it.
But right, but if she wasn't there, no part of it whatsoever, huh? How about getting the school started out here, the new school? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know your ex-wife was pretty active in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, our kids went to McNeil Island, and so when the federal penitentiary shut down and turned over to the state, well, then they were going to close the school. And so, you know, the kids were going to go to town. A lot of the parents either thought, well, it was better for grade school kids to be out here.
Well, it's a long day for little tiny kids.
Yeah, so we started, you know, trying to petition the school to put a school out here, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of hostility from some of the, particularly the Riviera. The Riviera said this was a retirement community and that we shouldn't have, if we have grade schools out, it would attract young families and it would distract from the retirement setting for the retirement.
For the old elderly people?
Yeah, so it was so hostile that they had the Riviera was boycotting my business and had actually told me that if I didn't stop supporting the school thing that they would see that I never got another dollar of business from Riviera.
Really?
So it was got pretty hostile over it.
Huh. I didn't know that. Yeah. They were that opposed to it.
Yeah, the board was real opposed to it. And the board was trying to coerce me out of out of supporting this and trying to get this going by threatening my business.
That's scary.
Pretty hostile.
No joke. Yeah. So how did the community eventually get the school out here, especially with Riviera and?
Well, because I don't think Riviera had anything to say in it.
Yeah.
You know, it was up to the school board, you know, and I think the parents were able, you know, it's pretty commonly held belief in education that children, small children, should be educated as close to home as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't make good sense to put 5-year-old kids on a ferry boat to go where that school should be at their homes. So mm-hmm. if they have difficulty at school, parents are available to them and stuff. So, you know, like the school board mm-hmm. thought that made sense. And
so did any of your kids, were they young enough to still go out to the island school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirsten and Amy.
Amy and Kirsten both went here.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger was too old. And then when the school opened, we had 6 refugee kids here, so they went to school there too.
Oh,
okay. Oh, not all of them. 2 of them weren't at school. 4 of them did, though. So we had 4 Laotian kids that were staying here,
mm-hmm.
and Amy and Kirsten went to school first open.
How did the Laotian kids do out here on the island?
They loved it.
They did.
Yeah, they still love it. I mean,
how did the other people feel about having them here? And
well, there was
how did they come to live with you? And
well, I started off as that, you know, with. You know, after this was in 1980, but anyway, with everything that happened in the war, you know, and all these refugees that were being left after the war, you know,
mm-hmm.
well, I had, you know, felt some guilt as our country for what had happened over there, you know, and also I had become very fond of the Vietnamese people when I was in Vietnam. I really liked Vietnamese, their customs and their food and stuff. So anyway, there was a thing in the paper about refugees, so I called up mm-hmm. this number, you know, and said I wanted to sponsor a family. Well, then they came out and talked to me, but they said, well, you know, that you couldn't, they wanted organizations, not
individuals,
you know,
mm-hmm.
because they thought it was too big of a burden. So we talked the church then into being the official sponsor, you know.
Right, but it's pretty much just you.
Well, we had to, I think we had, in order to get the church to do it, we had to tell them that it wouldn't cost them anything.
I see.
And John Eddy got real interested in it, too. John Eddy helped mm-hmm. with it and his wife. So anyway, we got so then we got a little paperwork in, and they sent a family. Well, the family turned out being Laotian, not Vietnamese.
Not Vietnamese.
And there was 6 of them, plus an aunt, so 7 counting,
mm-hmm.
extended family.
And so where did they all live?
They all lived at the apartment.
Up in the apartment?
Yeah, and it was interesting, when they first got here, you know, we had the apartment all fixed up, so they had quite a bit, it's a pretty big, both sides,
both
you know.
Both sides, right.
Well, they all were sleeping in one little corner, one small room, and, you know, he had protected his family for so long.
In such a confined space.
Well, he didn't feel safe having them in another room, even. He went off his family right here so he could protect them, you know. It was a long time before they spread out and started using the whole place.
Huh.
You know, it was just too big for them.
That's interesting.
But yeah, the kids loved it here.
Did they know any English or anything when they came?
Fun Kale knew a few words.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an interpreter came out who was a Vietnamese. And Laotians hate Vietnamese. And so Fun Kale had to, he said to the interpreter, he says, only because I'm American would I do this. I would never deal with a Vietnamese at home.
That's interesting.
But they ended up
now that they're over here and they're American, they can...
He would, he would do, you know, he was very unhappy that he had to get to talk, because, you know, that was why he had to leave his country, because the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese had come in there, and he didn't associate, he didn't distinguish between North or South or what their beliefs. Vietnamese were bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, I guess the Vietnamese have invaded Laos many times. So, but anyway, he ended up getting along fine with the interpreter.
That's interesting
That
they'd send an interpreter.
Well, because these people don't think, they don't know anything about the history or the culture of these people. They don't,
they
organizations,
know.
Yeah, they don't know.
Okay, you can speak this language, go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They no regard for
That's why we have so many problems with our national...
Foreign policy.
Foreign policy issues.
No joke.
Why we have terrorists in the world, maybe.
No kidding. How about the churches on the island? How did you see their involvement in the community, and what, and who, see if I can word this right. How were the church's involvement in the community?
When I came to the island, there was just one church, community church.
Mm-hmm.
And I started attending that with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt, well, that I was just newly involved in churches, and I thought churches should go out and fix the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the community church didn't seem interested in much except its own little group, you know.
Right.
Not trying to help anybody. So, you know, I had this vision of a church that would make a difference in the world. And so we started another church, and they met up above the shop here.
Mm-hmm.
They met up there for a while, then they met at the community club. And it started off pretty active. It had a lot of people in it, you know, and it was kind of an outreach church, you know, try to help people and send money.
Kind
to
of a non-denominational.
No, yeah, send money to where money was needed in different countries and stuff. And then the church grew. We got a pastor, and then of course the pastor thought we should get a, or somebody along the line decided we should have a building, so we bought property. You know, in my opinion, that was kind of into the church. Because then we started having to have money for the
upkeep and
property, and then we had to start saving money for the building. And then about that time, there was the horrible thing going on in Cambodia at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could send $200 would send, I think, a ton of rice delivered to Cambodia. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had brought up at a board meeting that we should you know, participate in this, and somebody said, "Well, I don't think so. We need to save money for our building."
Right. And so there went the outreach part.
And those things, and so the church got more and more into itself, you know,
mm-hmm.
into the building.
Which is exactly what you were trying to avoid to begin with.
And I got more and more discouraged, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I give up on churches.
Gotcha.
For now, I guess we got all kinds of them. We got, what, three?
I don't know how many we have now. We
got lots of churches.
And some of them seem to come up and dissolve overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the church that was built up there now, I don't think anybody goes to it, but 6-8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it had probably 100 people at one time.
Wow.
But it...
Yeah, I don't even know anymore about what's going on there. Let's see. How about you and what you do here besides work? I mean, today you're in here in the store talking about gathering chanterelle mushrooms and stuff.
What? Oh.
I mean, what do you do here besides work?
Oh, I like to go diving. I like to beachcomb.
Mm-hmm.
I like to gather things to eat, you know, off the beach, or clams and stuff, mussels, and I like to pick mushrooms. You know, I even like berry. I like a lot of any kind of gathering food out of the woods. I like, But I don't seem to have much time for it. It seems like the longer I've been here, the busier I get. Too many people come out here, I guess. Don't have as much time to play as I used to, I don't think. And if it's been harder to get responsible employees the longer I've been here, it seems like.
Less dedicated, or?
Yeah. I've got pretty good now, but I don't have enough. I've got Bart, and this Patrick has turned out to be a real good employee. But it's not near enough for what everybody wants.
Right. How has it been for your business this long on the island?
It's been, it's very, a lot of it's very rewarding because, you know, a lot of older people, you know, are really dependent upon us for
everything.
Everything, you know. They can call one place, you know.
Get a crack in their deck.
Whatever happens that we go fix, you know. And and some, you know, some of the, particularly old ladies, you know, I just love being able to take care of them, and I, they're so appreciative, you know. And I had a young a man my age came out and told me, he said, you know, the only reason my mother can live out here is because you're here. He said, if you're gone, I'd take her off this island in a minute. You know, so, you know, that's a pretty nice compliment.
Exactly.
You know, it makes you feel really good. It's not made much, you know, it's we've been able to live, but we've not.
You're not making zillions of dollars doing this.
We've never been able to have a savings account or anything, you know, so I have no retirement, so I'm kind of stuck working until I drop, I guess. But, you know, mostly it's been pretty satisfying, you know. I like the
people, the
atmosphere. Yeah, I like to be able to provide services to people. You know, I've never been a very good bill collector, and so we get stung a lot for.
Gotcha. Let's see. How about, I don't know, anything else that you, any other important people that you find, or tell me about Rudy Johnson. I haven't heard very many stories.
Okay. Rudy Johnson had the chicken farm when I got out here, and he lived with his sister, Alita. And the two of them lived in the house. Neither one of them had ever been married, I guess. And he was real crotchety. He was kind of a womanizer. When the women would come up to get eggs from the chicken house, you know, well, as soon as he got, they'd come inside, and he'd try to grab them by the boobs or brush their butts or something, you know. He was, you probably heard all these stories. I think Vivian knocked him for a loop one time when he grabbed her boob. I rented one of his chicken houses for him when I first lived on the island. And so I hung around for quite a bit because I was working on a boat in there. And so I met him, you know, saw him some quite a bit. We had a bunch of old scraggly cows, looked like they half starved to death.
Yeah.
And I remember he had what's kind of milk room up there now, was a whole bunch of chainsaws in there, you know. And I said, what the hell's all these chainsaws there for? He said, oh, goddamn things, don't run. He'd always talk,
never enunciating anything.
Yeah, but he's mad. But what would happen, he'd buy a chainsaw, you know, and he'd be using it. And if it wouldn't start, he'd have trouble. He didn't know how to fix it. And it'd just make him really fierce. He'd just throw it in there, and he'd go buy another one, you know. So he had all these chainsaws
that were just perfectly fine.
Something went wrong with him. He just threw them down and go buy another one, you know. He hated,
rather than deal
with those damn engines, you know.
That's funny.
I'm trying to think of some stuff he took on. I forgot a lot. Now I remember they had a. Rick Munson worked for him. I think John Cameron worked up there. Some of the kids that worked for him, his kids, could probably tell you more stories. I'm trying to think who worked up there for him. Maybe the Gordon kids might have worked up there. But he hired kids to work up there. And it was, from all of them I talked to, it was a real experience working for this guy.
I see.
He was hot-tempered and impatient. You know. After he died, you know, when his niece inherited the property, well, then the Historical Society, she gave it to Historical Society, and we were up there putting that back porch on the, it had an old wooden porch on the back of the house where that concrete is now, and we were putting that concrete one up there, a bunch of volunteers on a Saturday, and, you know, Ben Johnson, have you heard of Ben Johnson? Okay, Ben Johnson lived where Betsy lives now.
Yeah.
Her uncle. And he came down there, and we were he drives up in his car, you know, says, what are you guys doing? Rudy had been dead for several years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Does Rudy know you're doing this? He got real indignant. We were messing with Rudy's house, and Rudy went
Rudy was in the
other. So he'd forgotten.
Huh.
Ben Johnson was a character, too. Oh, goodness. He lived in that old house that we tore down that was behind where Betsy lives, that big pile of lumber behind mm-hmm. Betsy's house. That was his house. And he drank a lot when he was younger, but he'd quit drinking when he was older mm-hmm. for some reason. But his house was real filthy, and instead of cleaning the floors, he just laid more newspaper down over it. You know, so this house was heated with wood, and it just had just layers and layers of newspaper. That's what he kept covering the floor with. And he had, I don't know how many cats. He had probably 20 cats down there. And he had a board, a plank up against the kitchen window, mm-hmm. so if the cats and the raccoons could come in and out and eat.
The raccoons too?
Yeah, they could come in, and then he'd put the food on the floor in the house, and they would come in.
And eat off the floor.
So he's sharing his house with all these raccoons, and and it was just filthy dirty, you know. And I went down there one time to visit him,
mm-hmm.
and he says, would you like some ice cream? And I said, well, sure, you know, I'll have a bowl of ice cream. You know, that thing. So anyway, he looks around there, and finally he gets this, picks this bowl up off the floor that's got a, you know, that canned cat food, you know, the bowl had been licked clean, but there's kind of a little crust around the edge of it, you know, where they hadn't got it, you know, or had milk in it. So this bowl has got this crust around the outside of it, and it's been a carry on. He opens up the fridge and he dollops out a bunch of ice cream and sticks it in the middle of that bowl and hands it to me, you know. And I think, I don't know where the spoon came from. I didn't even want to know where that came from. So I'm trying to eat this ice cream without touching, let the ice, eat any ice cream, it touches the bowl, you know, trying to eat it out of the middle, you know, and like, God, I'm going to die from this. I don't know what to say, you know, it's just gross. And he was an awful dirty man.
Oh, gosh. That's awful.
He had an old 53 Chevrolet that he drove, and he couldn't, as he got older, his hearing got bad, and so he couldn't hear the motor, and he'd rev it up and slip the clutch real bad, you know. Well, the last clutch we put in it lasted 2 days, and he burned it out in 2 days, so for Russ Cameron took the car away from him, and he started driving it.
Oh, dear.
And he dug his own well across the street from his house,
uh-huh.
and he dug down 80-some feet, never hit water. So he had his hole 80 feet deep, and he'd crawl down a bunch of ladders, 80 feet down, dig the dirt up, put it in the sink, then he would pull it with his truck up, you know, and mm-hmm. then he'd put it in the back of his truck, and he'd drive down the road and scatter it on the road, get rid of it. But after he died, well, then Russ was worried about somebody falling down it, and so we took dump trucks, and it took 20 dump truck loads of dirt to fill a hole up he dug by hand.
Oh, my gosh.
20 dump truck loads.
How long would that take?
I don't know how long
dig that
it took him, but that was a huge hole.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it was probably 15, 20 feet across the top. Not 80 feet. It was kind of tapered like this, but it was just huge.
Huge hole.
Dug it all by hand. That was actually retired. He started that after he was had been a tugboat driver.
Oh, my goodness.
So he did this in his retirement, dug that big hole.
That's a lot.
Rupert Berg was another interesting person.
Uh-huh.
You find out about.
Nobody's really told me much about Rupert.
He was what, 3 years old when he came to the island, I guess. Very young. Came as a baby, maybe 2 or 3. And one of the stories he told was interesting is that he and his dad had bought a pig in Steilacoom. And so they made a little, like a little barge with a fence on it, you know. And then they rowed over to Steilacoom with this thing behind a rowboat. And they put their pig in this little pin on the barge, I think, and they rowed it back to
the
Anderson Island. Well, they got up on the beach there, and they were trying to get the pig out of off this little barge pin up to the house, and the pig got away from it, ran down, jumped into the bay, and started swimming back to Steilacoom. They had to paddle out there and chase it down, get a rope on it, and get it back. Didn't want to come to Anderson Island.
Oh, that's funny. No interest whatsoever.
And Rupert was a little boy when they built this house. This house was built in 1907, and I wish I'd have written him down, but he could remember the name of everybody who'd worked on this house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said, how can you remember? I said, well, I was down there every day. He said, I hung out down there every day the whole time they were building it.
Huh.
So he was just a little boy.
Right.
Yeah, he's had a lot of interesting stories. He was out there on the island.
Do you remember any of them other than?
Yeah, think offhand. They probably come to me when you're not here.
Well, do me a favor. Yeah. Keep a piece of paper in your pocket and I'll come back and try and suck it out of you.
I wish I'd have remembered more things I heard. There was a lot of interesting people to talk to
mm-hmm.
when I first got here. My memory's bad.
Let's see, who else are I think?
Hattie Johnson, you talked to me about the Hattie Johnson family?
Nobody has said anything about Hattie.
They're, and the two sisters, the two sisters that lived down there in that log cabin?
Not
and then
anything.
Betty Schmidt and Floeva Siemens,
mm-hmm.
were Hattie Johnson's daughters. Hattie was there when I first came in, and her daughters lived down there, and then they passed away. Well, remember, we took one of the daughters in. She was probably around 80, maybe, or something. Anyway, she was had an aid call as a medic. We were taking her out in the stretcher, and she says she loved it out here, loved that old house.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, "Take the stretcher back and turn around so I can say goodbye, so I can see my house one more time." You know, I started bawling. You know, she knew she wasn't going back.
Oh.
You know. They were not interesting ladies. But I don't see none of their family ever showed up out here until after they died. So I don't know if their kids know anything about it or not.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't even know they had any family until they died. And all of a sudden, all these people showed up to get the property.
Right. Hmm. Let's see.
And Hallie Green, her son is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Hallie Green was? Lived up with Johnson's? And her son, I saw him several years ago. He's but I don't know what his name is now for sure. Somebody else might know.
Hallie Green. Okay.
And you might be able to get some information out of Hazel still. I don't know. It'd be worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
She mostly talks about Kansas. When she's a little child, now. I got to tell me a lot about Kansas, but not so much about out here.
Well, that's amazing. How, I don't know, to me it was really, when Hazel started to have problems,
mm-hmm.
I was really moved by how many people were there,
mm-hmm.
and how everyone started to just ask what they could do for mm-hmm. any kind of help whatsoever, you know, and how is that going now, after these many months?
Well, some of them are being paid, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't, but yeah, there's still.
Still lots of.
I don't think, you know, it gets tiresome,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've been trying to go up every night,
mm-hmm.
but you know, sometimes I'm just too tired to make it up there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she likes to, you know, she likes rituals, you know, and my ritual's been I go up at, you know, bedtime, and I lay down in bed and mm-hmm. pat her and hug her and
mm-hmm.
talk to her as she goes to sleep, you know, but.
Just routine and
yeah. She likes, you know. Jen, she likes men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she likes men friends. You know, she says it's easier for her, I think, on some things with men than it is for women.
Mm-hmm.
She likes Frank real well. Frank goes mm-hmm. up there quite a bit.
All the time.
And she likes Tanner. she really enjoys Tanner.
Tanner came into the store and he got a balloon from someone or somewhere, and he asked Frank if he could go and give it to Hazel because he thought she would like it.
Yeah, she's real thrilled with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten used to go up there every morning and have breakfast and tea with,
okay.
tea and toast with Hazel and Earl when they were little, you know. So she had a really close relationship, you know. And they've been really good with all the kids. All the kids have been up there. Andrew got along really good with her
mm-hmm.
when he was little. But she's always liked little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten, especially. Kirsten's been a lot of time
there. Up there.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that you can think of off the top of your hand you want to share today?
Nothing to think of.
That you can think of? Okay, well, let's just go ahead and stop now.